Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And as you may have already heard, the author and poet Maya Angelou has died at the age of 86. Her death is being reported just in the last few hours this morning. Best known for her classic civil rights era memoir, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, one of the first times an African-American woman had a bestseller of any kind, Maya Angelou appeared on this program several times. And as a tribute, we are going to replay her final appearance now, a beautiful interview that she gave us just last year. We'll replay the whole thing, beginning with my introduction of her on April 13th, 2013. Maya Angelou may be the only person to have written 7 autobiographies, I'm not sure, but who has lived her life? She won a National Book Award and was nominated for a Tony for acting. She wrote music with Max Roach and Abby Lincoln and danced duets with Alvin Ailey, was friends with James Baldwin, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King, a mentor to Oprah Winfrey. She directed movies and public television documentaries, read from a long-form poem of hers at the inauguration of President Clinton. Remember that? Lived in Arkansas, California, New York, Ghana, Egypt, Hawaii, I'm probably leaving some places out, taught a generation of college students, and much more. And finally, she has written a memoir about her mother called Mom and Me and Mom. Dr. Angelou, thank you for giving us this time. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be back with WNYC.
Early on in the book, you tell the story of your mom, Vivian Baxter, growing up tough, with tough brothers in a family where your grandfather taught them to fight. That wouldn't be seen as a good thing today. Can you talk about the fighting Baxter brothers and their sister and what it meant in their time and place?
Yes, it was amazing. Imagine being born black in St. Louis, Missouri at the turn of the 20th century, 1903 or 1905. I mean, my grandfather, my mother's father, told her, his children, 5 boys and 2 girls, that if they got in jail for burglary or thievery, he would sell their mother to get, he would let them rot. But if they got in jail for fighting, he would sell their mother to get their bail. Because he said they have to learn to fight, stand up and fight back. And since she was the oldest, he told her she was the one who had to toughen them up. So she learned to fight, and really seriously fight, in the streets, in the main streets in St. Louis in the early 1900s. And she would start a fight with the biggest, baddest person in their block and not ask her brothers to help her. And, of course, they would wade in and help. So my grandfather told her, he said, I don't want them telling me these little silly stories about what they've gotten in school and the grades they're getting. That's girl work. I want them to tell me how they can fight.
She had that,
and she was wonderful.
This book intersects in the beginning with your best-known memoir, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, published in 1969, about your childhood. People who read that know that your mother sending you away from your Arkansas home when you were 3 to live with your grandmother in California was a pivotal moment in your life.
Actually, it's the other way around. She sent me away from my home in California to my father's mother down in Arkansas, to a little village in Arkansas. And I grew up there until I was 13.
Right, with your grandmother. And
yes.
In all these years since Caged Bird, have you come to a different understanding of why your mother sent you away?
Yes, I did. She told it quite clearly. She said she and my father realized a few weeks after they were wed that they really didn't like each other very much. I think they had lust, but no love. And so when I was 3 and my brother 5, they agreed to separate. And it may have been the best thing for my country that they did so. I know there are people who say, oh, what a shame. No, they should. They should have separated. Now, the next thing they did wasn't so smart. They put us on a train. First, neither wanted to be bothered with toddlers. so my father's mother said, send the children to me. So they put us on a train in Los Angeles with tags on our arms, which read, these children are to be given to Mrs. Annie Henderson in Stamps, Arkansas. We had no adult supervision. Nobody was looking after us except the black Pullman car porters and dining car waiters who would take us off trains and put us on other trains and take us off. It's amazing. I mean, 80 years ago, and I still wonder, did we get there? How on earth? But we got there. And my grandmother, she was wonderful, great. I have her legacy and my mother's and my brother's, and I've done well.
But you also, I want to read something that really moved me from right near the end of your book, this sentence.
All right.
You wrote, you were a terrible mother of small children, but there has never been anyone greater than you as a mother of a young adult.
That's true.
And people hardly ever talk about the parenting of young adults. Can you talk about what it means to be a great parent of a young adult?
Quite often people think well of themselves if they love little children and they can be patient and they put little bows in their hair and put the little boys in ties and shoes and jackets and they're so proud. But then when a child gets to be about 14, 13, 14, 15, the minute he or she opens her mouth, the parents say, shut up, go over there and sit down, keep your dress down, stop acting so, you talk too much. My mother was terrible with small children. She told herself, she told me that when I was three, I was sitting on the porch and I asked for something. She didn't give it to me and I slapped her leg and she said she backhanded me with all her might. She backhanded me off the porch into the dirt. She said, I realized that I didn't have the patience for small children. I was so blessed that my grandmother did. My grandmother had patience. She spoke softly, and she spoke at long length. She made a southern accent sound like, syrup. It was just wonderful. So I grew up with her.
Maya Angelou, my guest on WNYC, her new memoir, Mom and Me and Mom. By the way, we've been having a little Angelou or Angelou conversation. Could you clear that up once and for all?
Yes. My first husband was Greek. And when the Greeks change their names, quite sometimes, the male gets an O-S ending, I was told, and the female gets an O-U ending. But it's still pronounced O. So my name was Maya Angelopoulos.
And you shortened it and you say Angelou.
I didn't shorten it. The family shortened it. When I met him, he was already Angelos.
You write in this book about living in New York, beginning with a year in Brooklyn, because Manhattan would have been just too much. May I ask when that was?
I really moved, I think the end of the 50s.
And you write about being taken under the wing of the Harlem Writers Guild.
Yes.
And that you wrote songs with Abby Lincoln and Max Roach at that time.
Yes. I wrote also with Miss Roberta Flack, and I've written with Quincy Jones.
Can you recall, take your pick out of that list, what they were like to work with, or particularly about that 50s Max Roach, Abby Lincoln heyday, anything about the jazz scene?
Yes. Abby and I wrote a song, If Wishes Were Horses, Beggars Would Ride. It was a wonderful song. I don't remember much of it, and I'm sorry to say she's gone. Max Roach was a brother to me. He really brothered me. And sometimes women who say they want mates really need brothers. They need especially strong women. They need a man strong enough to say, that was brilliant. I heard you speak the other day, and that was brilliant. I saw what you did, and that was wonderful. They also need to be strong enough to say, I heard you speak the other day, and that was dumb. that wasn't smart at all. So I'm blessed to have had some very strong brothers, mostly black, but I had a couple of white ones, and one Spanish-speaking. Who really brothered me.
that kind of jazz is mostly gone today. I wonder what you would say that it meant to black culture or American culture at the time, and if you think hip-hop or any other contemporary music today has a parallel cultural resonance.
Absolutely. Hip-hop is very much very important today. Black and white people are hippie-hopping and rapping. I think it's important to see that there is a time for everything. There was a time for bebop. And the adults during the time for bebop looked at bebop and said, what the heck is that? It doesn't even have a melody. What is that?
People call Charlie Parker Chinese music.
Charlie Parker, I know. Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and that. But the people before them had the Charleston and the Black Bottom. And other people, older people, said about the Charleston, why do you wiggle your butt so much? And we had crooning. Just every age has its trend.
And shocks the parents of that time.
Yes, of course.
You will be 85 on Thursday, if I've got my facts right, which is also the 45th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. That means he was killed on your 40th birthday. How close?
Right here in New York. I was here in New York getting ready to join him.
Getting ready to join him for?
Yes, because he had asked a few weeks before if I would come back to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I had been the Northern representative of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. But after that, I joined Malcolm X. And after that, I was just at home. I said, yes, I would go. He wanted somebody to go around the country and collect money from churches, black churches in particular. He said the March on Washington, the Peace March, would not be a black march. This was for poor people, the Poor People's March. Mm-hmm. He said he would like to get black, white, Spanish-speaking, Native American, Asian, all people to march and come into Washington and stay there until legislature could be changed. So he said we'll have to put up some tent cities, and we'll need money. So will you do it? And I said, yes, I will do it. The only thing is I'll do it after my birthday because I want to explain in New York to my New York sophisticates, my friends, why I'm going back with Martin Luther King. And he said, yes, it'll be just good. And when people accuse me of being nonviolent, I'll be able to tell them, well, I don't know about that. Maya Angelou is back with us. And I used to be quite the rebel. On the 4th, I was making food. I was going to go down on Monday to Atlanta. On that day, I was making food for the party, and my sister friend called me, Dolly McPherson. She said, sister, have you listened to the phone? Have you listened to the radio? I said, no. Television, no. She said, don't turn anything on, and don't answer the phone. I'm on my way over there. And when she came, I couldn't imagine what on earth had happened. When she came, she walked in my door and said, Martin King is dead. So for the next, until Coretta died last year, mm-hmm. I have been, every birthday, it's been bittersweet. I'm grateful to be alive, and I'm saddened that we have all lost a master of peace.
May I ask, have you known Nelson Mandela?
Yes, I know Mr. Mandela. I met Mr. Mandela in Egypt when I lived there. I was married to a South African freedom fighter. And then I've seen him here. I just got a message from a friend in South Africa who gave me Winnie's new phone number. So I haven't called her yet. When I get home after the birthday, I'll call Mrs. Mandela.
Are you more of an optimist or a pessimist about the future of humanity? Do you generally... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm an optimist. I wouldn't get up in the morning. Oh, if I was a pessimist, I like Johnny Walker blue and Johnny Walker gold. I just stack up a pillow in my bed and put a bottle of Johnny Walker gold and a straw I would zip out of here. No, I'm an optimist, indeed. Look at you calling me on my birthday, and I'm 85 years old, and I'm black. Look at this.
And let me ask you one question about the arts before we unfortunately run out of time. Having danced and acted and written and directed, do you have a favorite art form through which to express yourself?
Well, I love them all. I respect them all. And when I'm doing any one of them, that's all there is in the world. But I long for poetry. I have a yearning to read it and to write it and to recite it to myself. All sorts of poets, Amiri Baraka and Nikki Giovanni and Sonia Sanchez. I love them. I love some of Shakespeare. I love it. And I like Edgar Allan Poe so much, I call him Eep to myself. So I suppose I don't want to say I like it more than, but it fills me when I need that particular feeling.
Maya Angelou's new book is called Mom and Me and Mom. Such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. And have a great Labor Day, everybody. Talk to you again tomorrow. Well, that was Maya Angelou here in April of last year. We repeated it on Labor Day last year. She died today at the age of 86. She was so beautiful in that interview, I thought we would replay it as a tribute. Coming up, a kind of segue, authors of a new generation. I know one of them is going to tell us she idolized Maya Angelou. Stay tuned.